say I'm done, but what they don't know, it's where I've been and who I am, all the ways I've grown.
This isn't self-help, it's a full-on rebirth. Welcome to Girl Wake Up, the podcast for women who are done playing small, staying silent, or living by rules they never wrote. I'm Amy Polacco, journalist, divorce and life coach, and freedom warrior, and I'm here to help you take your power back. Because the system isn't going to save us, we need to save ourselves. So grab your coffee, your courage, and maybe a few curse words. It's time to wake up. Welcome, everybody, to Girl Wake Up. On today's episode, we have two amazing guests, the Dinas, who co-edited this incredible, soulful, and funny book, Midlife Private Parts, Revealing Essays That Will Change the Way You Think About Age. Thank you so much for being here, ladies, to discuss answering your midlife wake-up call.
Thank you for having us.
We're excited to be here.
You know, I attended one of your book events, right? And there was such an energy in the room. I think it shows that storytelling is so crucial to bringing women together, especially during this time called midlife. But I want to tell everybody about you first before we get started. Dina Alvarez is a writer who started her writing career as a freelance writer for Parenting Magazine in New York City before launching her own bilingual parenting publication in the early 2000s in an effort to help women find resources as they raise children in a new culture, while also bridging the gap between first and second generation Latinos looking to hold on to their cultural roots. And Dina Aronson is a writer, editor, and pro-age advocate, I love that, who is passionate about shining a light on midlife women and reframing the cultural conversation around aging. She's a former attorney and founder of a legal search consultancy. She pivoted careers at 51 after realizing how little content reflected her own evolving midlife experience. She began freelancing for startups focused on the over 40 woman and founded the Patina blog, now a Substack newsletter called Patina with Dina Aronson, where she explores aging through her midlife lens. Well, you ladies know that this podcast is called Girl Wake Up, right? Because I believe women are going through a collective awakening right now, or reawakening. And that's really what midlife is all about, right?
For yeah, sure. Absolutely. Such a big change when you get to your midlife stage and how you think about almost everything in your life.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of reckoning happening, right? I think, you know, as we move through our 40s into our 50s, if we have kids, they're getting older, they're fleeing the nest, you know, in the best of ways. But I think it, for a lot of us, there's a spaciousness that starts to open up, and maybe the cadence of our days was a little bit different. There's a little maybe more quiet, and we can tap in and really start to get clear, because when we're younger and we're building careers and we're having families and we're doing all the things, it's a lot. There's not a lot of quiet. There's not a lot of time to like step back and reflect. And we get to this point, and I think that we are able to like take a little bit of a step back and say, huh, Is this what I want to be doing? Is this where I want to be? And I think that's where a lot of women start with this reckoning and this awakening.
Right. And you know, I'm a divorce coach, right? So I see women going through this every single day. I have clients across the country. Of course, I'm in Connecticut, so I have many in the New York metro, Connecticut area. But this is so common where they kind of wake up and say, okay, what do I really want to be doing for the next 30, 40 years of my life? And, you know, we're going to get into, you know, giving so much to other people, right? I'd love to hear a little bit about your personal reawakening stories. I mean, something motivated you to come together and put this, you know, anthology together that has affected so many women, made them laugh, made them cry, made them feel seen, made them feel heard. You know, what led you to this?
Well, I think for me, it really was an organic kind of pivot. And I felt a change as I started getting closer to the end of my 40s. And I began to think about, you know, if not now, when? And I'd always had the idea of wanting to do an anthology on a different topic, but as I started to see the midlife space and meet such interesting women and see them pivot, see them opening up their worlds and deciding to create new ventures for themselves, I thought, huh, doesn't seem like anyone's having a midlife crisis to me, at least not the world I was living in. And so the shift between, you know, getting towards midlife and, you know, the longevity factor is there, right? Like we could live another 30 or 40 years, right? So
right.
Part of
no
it
women.
Was that. Yeah, exactly. Like we're so lucky in that way that we have these opportunities to live longer and the tools to live longer. And it just felt like my midlife journey was a burst of creativity, a desire to really think about the future in ways that I hadn't done before. Because as Dina said, you know, you're raising kids, maybe you're getting another degree, you're caring for elderly parents. Like there's so much in the mix. And I think finally, when you get to midlife, and I believe every single woman goes through this, I don't think anyone does not experience it. You really have to take a step back because suddenly your roles have changed and you need to find where you can fulfill yourself instead of being that person that kind of shines the light on everyone else. You suddenly begin to say, you know, I need to actually take care of myself because the kids are leaving, the relationships are changing, your job is changing. You're thinking about how you want to spend the next couple of years as you move into deciding if you're going to stay in the workforce, if you're going to get out, if you're going to pivot. So for me, it was all those questions all at once. And it was also the connection I began to have to midlife women who were really making huge strides in their own midlife space. So for me, it was a combination like of everything. And wanting to do the anthology, it just felt like such a perfect fit. Like, why not tell these stories while I'm going through my own midlife? And in a way, you know, tell the stories that, you know, I always say we wrote the book we wanted to read and we did that so we could learn how other women were managing midlife.
Right.
Yeah. And I'll say for me, like, as you read in my bio, you know, I was approaching my 50s, moving through my 40s, and there was a lot of stuff going on and I had no language for perimenopause at the time. I started to go through that like at 43, pretty young. And, you know, there were times I thought I was losing my mind. I thought physically things were really wrong. I had been rushed to an emergency room with heart palpitations at one point. Like, there just was not any information. And so that piece of it, along with sort of, you know, this place I was finding myself in, I had my own business. I'd been doing it a long time. And I was just like, I don't see myself doing this for another 20 or 30 years or however long. So those things really propelled me to want to be writing in this space. I always loved to write all of my, you know, as an attorney, we're telling stories. In my recruiting business, I was telling stories. I wanted to tell different kinds of stories. And I will say that the sort of, if there was a moment, and it's not really a moment, but an event in my life, you know, Dean and I had met, I think we knew we wanted to collaborate on something. And then my mom got sick. And when my mom died, that was really such a catalyst for me in terms of this project and this book, because, you know, if she had lived, I would have, all of my life would have been around taking care of her. And so when she died, I felt like she left this space. And I really felt so compelled to fill the space with something that would honor her and that would help women in some way. And I knew just from, you know, our experiences and the women we know, like Dina said, so many women were doing amazing things, but also there's a lot of hard stuff and there's not a lot of talk about that. Right. And so I think, you know, putting together these stories just felt so right. Like letting women in, letting them see that they're not alone, you know, in these parts, you know, and that they can move through those parts and that life can really get better with age. So I thought that was a really beautiful way to use the space. And I was just really fortunate that Dina and I met. We met in our 50s. This is a new midlife friendship. I'm using air quotes. you know, and we just really gelled, and we both were very aligned on the, you know, sort of the need and to put together the book we wanted to see. So
oh, you did a great job with it. And you do cover, you know, caring for elderly parents, which is tough. And, you know, when you were talking a minute ago, it reminded me, Dina, of this essay in here, It's All in Your Head, right? So many times the things we're experiencing in midlife are discounted. And I want to ask you about that. I mean, what were the old tropes about, you know, menopause and midlife? You know, it was mainly in the shadows, right?
Yeah, absolutely. It makes me think of, there's a book out called Hot and Bothered, and I was reading it at the time that I was coming off of having frozen shoulder, in both shoulders. And it was, I don't know if anyone's had frozen shoulder, they could tell you how painful it was. And so she writes in the book that in like the 1850s, frozen shoulder was called, when women presented with frozen shoulder, it was called hysterical paralysis of the arms. So it has been a constant, one long trope over the centuries, you know, when women present to some of their physicians, you know, they say, oh, I mean, you read Marian Adams' essay where she writes about being discredited, and she ended mm-hmm. up finally getting some help on the 14th or the 15th doctor. So it's unfortunate that this is a state where we still are. And Dina and I talk about how we hope that the narrative is changing and shifting with, since we're talking more about menopause and women's health, and there's so many, you know, people wanting to pass bills and change, you know, the healthcare system for us. But it has been a constant struggle through the centuries, right, for women to get their voices heard. And that was part of this collective for the book was, you know, it's about time we put this out there and we let people know, as Dina said, you know, it's not easy. Like Sarah Milken, who wrote for the book, says, you know, midlife is hard and good. And that was really what we wanted to generate with this book. But yes, there are many tropes we could talk about in midlife.
Right. And I've written about many as a journalist related to women in our family court system, right? I mean, this is my book, you know, I co-authored. And there are so many parallels, ladies, right? Is that women labeled crazy, women labeled unstable, unfit mother, you know, in some cases, abusers trying to get custody of the children. So we see this over and over again. And, you know, it is a remnant of the patriarchy, right? And it shows up in how we talk or don't talk about aging. And, you know, there's a lot of discussion right now about, you know, devaluing non-reproductive women, right? Yeah. And how, you know, are we expected to just disappear at a certain age? I'm wondering what you think of this collective conversation, Dina Aronson.
Yeah, and that's exactly where I was going to go with this question is, you know, in terms of tropes and narrative that, you know, somehow we reach a certain point and then we're like off a cliff, you know, and it's funny, I think in the introduction of our book, we start by saying, Google midlife woman. And, you know, it per Google, it's pretty bleak, right? Like, and that's just so not the case. So I think, you know, and I think there's a lot of reasons for that, you know, it's this sort of ingrained cultural narrative that our value is tied to our youth, the way we look, and we internalize this stuff. And it's just so, even though, you know, we get to these points and we reckon and we do start to see more clearly, it's even hard for, I think, you know, us, then we're like immersed in this space. But I just, those, it's very, there's a lot of unlearning that has to happen. Right. And it's funny, like as I think enlightened as we're starting to be and we're having these open conversations and it's amazing. And I think the menopause conversation really opened the door to a broader aging conversation. And it's actually been incredible to watch because what's happened is, you know, you change the culture, you change the conversation and then policy follows. So like Dina mentioned, bills pen. I mean, there's bills that have been passed mm-hmm. now. And I think 26 states either passed or pending that would they require insurance coverage that speak to the necessity of training doctors and medical training requirements. So and that is so exciting to me in terms of this broader conversation because we need to change policy when it comes to age too. I mean, we are still mm-hmm. living and we get to this point and you've got ageism and sexism kind of converging, mm-hmm. you know, and we've got to talk about that. We've got to address that. And I think by sharing our stories, we're showing that these things are so wrong. These narratives are so wrong. So
it's true. And we had a recent guest who happens to be a good friend of mine, Aliza Rosen, who's a producer in LA. And we talked about how women are depicted and their stories are told in Hollywood. You know, she's in her 50s and works with a lot of high powered executives in that world, women in their 50s and beyond. And I think it's just great because when we take the reins and tell our own stories, as you have in this book, right, it dispels a lot of these old stereotypes and myths for sure. I wanted to mention one essay that I particularly loved. And you know, I was going to bring this one up because I'm a divorce coach, right? And you ladies know I'm twice divorced, but Katie Fogarty, who was there at your book event, I was able to meet. I just want to read the first few lines of her essay. called Toxic Rage. I want a divorce, four words detonating, a sunny day, shouting in my gravel driveway at my college boyfriend, husband of 24 years. He looked shocked. I felt crazy. How had I gotten to this moment, this mad utterance? And then she goes on, you know, no midlife marriage heads into a third decade undented and unscratched, you know, but suddenly I felt crazy most of the time. And it was funny because that night, her husband happened to be in the back. He was such a good supporter, right? And I was chatting with him after and came up in conversation. I was a divorce coach. He started laughing. I said, I know you don't need me. I know. We've covered this. You guys are good. You're one of the good guys. But we had some laughs over it. But, you know, I was chatting with Katie afterwards because I see two sides of it. And yes, I think there are those, you know, we've all had these emotional moments, right, in midlife. But then there's also times that menopause and hormones are weaponized against women. I see that in the world I'm in, right, in family court, that, oh, she's going through menopause, so she's going crazy, so therefore she can't have custody of the children, or she shouldn't get these assets in the divorce. It's like, what? But anyway, there is a healthy part of anger and rage in midlife, right?
Absolutely. I mean, I think, you know, there's a writer, Rebecca Traister, who wrote about rage being like don't quote me, but like a catalyst. Like rage can be very motivating, right? It's funny, I sat with girlfriends 2 weeks ago and we had a Write Your Congressperson party because we were all feeling so angry and helpless. And so I think that you can channel that rage into something very productive.
Absolutely.
Look, I don't want to walk around angry all the time, but we have to also honor our emotions, right? Mm-hmm. We're feeling them and we have to feel them. And oftentimes I think when we're at that point, that rage can be very motivating.
Yeah. And I just want to quickly add that, you know, people aren't used to our anger. You know, we get to midlife and we're changing and their hormones. And when we're younger, we're acquiescing and we want to keep the peace and we're the buffer and we have all these roles. And, you know, anger is not really part of the equation. At least I can only speak for myself. At least it wasn't for me. And I think when you get to midlife, you know, there's a combination of things that really spark, you know, like it did for Katie, these moments where you really feel like if I don't say this now, if I don't speak up, if I don't allow myself to have a voice, you know, A, nothing is going to change. And B, I'm not going to respect myself anymore because you're in a stage in your life where you really have to take accountability for your emotions. And sometimes, you know, anger rears its head and you should be allowed to, you know, express yourself just like, you know, other sects of the population are. So I think that the anger portion at midlife is something that's kind of, I think, a good thing, right? Because it frees us and it allows us to, you know, step into a space that people aren't ready for us and they may be surprised by this person that they may not recognize, but, you know, it's part of the growth process.
Right, absolutely. I think it's liberating, right? It's empowering. It's like we're taking our power back and our voices back. And I think that's one of the many reasons that the I Do Not Care Club is taking off, right, by Melanie there. And I want to mention another essay because I know Jessica Fine called Not Without My Readers. And I thought it was funny, right? You know, she wears contacts, but she still has a dozen pairs of glasses all over the place. Like you can't see my desk with my glasses. And I loved her book. I want to give it a shout out, which was just so touching, a memoir of family Dreams and Broken Jeans, I would highly recommend. But you know, so there are some real touching but funny essays in here. You really run the gamut.
Yeah, I mean, there's all kinds of styles, you know, and we wanted, that's what we wanted. I feel like there's like an emotional arc to the book. Like, you want to laugh, we want you to cry, we want you to feel like, I like really want women to feel like they're sitting down with girlfriends when they're reading that book, mm-hmm. almost like you're in conversation with these women, because these women have so, and I think the vulnerability of the stories, because even the funny stories are vulnerable. And I think that vulnerability really makes the reader feel like they are sort of in conversation with that writer and are going through these things. You know, there's flashes, even if you can't relate exactly to an essay, you'll see flashes of yourself through all of them, you know?
Yeah. Absolutely.
And one of the best threads is in every single one is that moment of self-acceptance, which mm-hmm. kind of puts us all over the hurdle of what's next, right? Because mm-hmm. we tend not to really be that compassionate to ourselves in our younger years. And when we get to the midlife moment, we realize like, I need to practice some self-acceptance. And that was part of Jess's story too, that I loved. She was like, so what if I have, you know, two pair of glasses on my head and I can't find the, you know what I mean? Like, it's just part of, you know, the midlife experience is, you know, being able to say like, you know, I'm not perfect. I certainly don't want to be perfect. And this is part of, you know, who I am now. And I have to accept my shortcomings as well as the things that I do really well.
Absolutely. I have to tell you something funny. I had your book after I went to the event and my 17-year-old son saw it and said, private parts. I don't even want to know what this is about, right? But in all seriousness, you know, you do talk about sexual confidence in midlife, and there are some essays on that. Do you ladies want to talk about that?
Well, we, you know, one of the writers in the book, Gabriella Espinosa, you know, this is really what she does, is helps empower women to own their pleasure, to take back their pleasure, because that, again, sort of culturally, we are not taught to revel in our pleasure, you know, like we're just, you know, it's, there's still so much sort of shame, I think, wrapped around a woman's sexuality. And it's so funny. I love Gabriella's story because, you know, she said she would do it. And then I think it was even for somebody who spends so much time in that space and is working to empower other women, it still felt really vulnerable for her to do. And I just think it's another one of these things where it's, you know, we don't talk about it freely. Every woman goes through, you know, as we move into midlife, our bodies change. You know, what worked when we were 30 years old doesn't necessarily work when we're 50 years old. And so I think it's been a very valuable conversation because they're, you know, again, like even women going to their doctors are embarrassed to talk about some of these changes. And there's a lot of easy fixes for some of what goes on with our bodies. And if we don't ask, and if people aren't talking about it, we're going to suffer in silence. And we've suffered in silence as a gender for much too long, in my humble mm-hmm. opinion. So I think it's amazing that there are women that are brave to put that out, to be vulnerable, and, you know, in service of other women. Yeah. So I think it's great.
Absolutely. You know, I want to talk about this theme of women prioritizing themselves. I mean, do you think midlife is the first time many women do? I mean, I see this with so many of my divorce coaching clients who, it's almost like they're that Rip Van Winkle waking up in the woods and have been asleep for 100 years. Like, wait a minute, my kids are going off to college, perhaps. I am starting to look at my life. Maybe I gave up my career to be home for my spouse, to, you know, advance in their career. So it really is a complete shift. I'm wondering if you see that a lot as well, obviously.
I mean, I think Dina and I see it with almost everyone we've come to meet in midlife. I can't think of anyone who hasn't had some sort of spark of creativity or desire to pursue something new, or, you know, it's very much them wanting to put themselves first. We've gone to many of our book events where women come up to us and say how much they love the book, but they also say how it's changed them, how they realize mm-hmm. that they can, you know, pivot and shift, and they're happy to read stories about other women that are doing it. And it's given them, you know, kind of the incentive to just go through with what they were already feeling they wanted to do. So I do think it's we're all, like I say to Dina, you know, we're all in this together. And I think that that is definitely a big movement in women putting themselves first finally. And not that they haven't done it in certain situations earlier in their life, but there's something different about now. Like now it's like you are really in charge of what you want to do next in ways that you maybe weren't before.
Right. And you certainly can be happily married and still, you know, prioritize yourself. But I see it a lot in my world of women wanting to stay single. I mean, I wrote an article for Newsweek a few months ago about that, you know, women getting through divorce and saying, you know what, I want to do what I want to do now. And I hear often, especially in women who are in unhealthy relationships, I stayed for the kids. And I often say to them, you need to leave for the kids, like whether your kids are 5, 10, or 25, they are observing you, they are modeling your relationship. And so we talk about that a lot.
Yeah, yeah. And I would add, I think for some women, it's getting to that point of saying it's me first now doesn't feel natural. And there's a lot, you know, like, I feel like we've had a lot of conversations where we're like, it's not selfish. It's really the highest form of loving yourself. But I do think, and that's another, I think, really powerful element of storytelling, is that it gives you permission almost, like in seeing other people mm-hmm. do the thing, it makes you feel like, oh, maybe this is okay to focus on me now. And I'll just say, when I was first starting my blog back in 2020, I sat with a woman, I was consulting with her and talking to her about the idea. And she said something that's always stayed with me. She said, you know, as we're moving it into this point in life, like we're doing what we think we should do. And now we get to do what we want to do. Right. Mm-hmm. And that's always stayed with me. And I think we are so burdened by the shoulds when we're younger. And I think that, you know, that's such a beautiful shed. We're shedding the shoulds, you know, and mm-hmm. I think it's a really beautiful way to move forward. And like Dina said, I mean, we've seen women taking control, finding their agency and focusing on themselves. And it's great because there's a world of possibility when you actually give yourself permission to think about what you want.
Right. And isn't midlife, when women, you know, so many articles and studies show this lately, are the most powerful? I mean, women business owners, you know, between 40 and 60, it's huge. And, you know, studies, I believe, show they are more successful because they bring this whole life experience with them when they start a business. That's one of my favorite things to do, you know, in divorce coaching, is sometimes post-divorce is helping a woman start something new, or a new career, or a passion project. And I'm sure you see that as well.
Yeah. And I would say, like, because oftentimes the topic of, I guess, reinvention is such a big word. And I think it makes women feel overwhelmed. But in talking about that and sort of what's next, I think women are like, I don't know how to, you know I felt, I don't know how to do this. I don't have any bylines. Who's going to take me seriously? All these crazy limiting thoughts that go through my head. But what I've come to understand and what I like to share is that, you know, unless you're learning Mandarin, you're never really starting from scratch. You have all of your life experiences, whether that means you were managing your home while you were raising your kids, or you were a lawyer, or you were an insurance salesman, whatever it is, like you've learned so much. And I think it's a really helpful exercise to actually sort of inventory your life experience, because I did. And I was like, oh, you know, and you start to connect those dots and you understand that you know, you're sort of jumping off a platform. You're not starting from the bottom. Mm-hmm. So, and I just think that's really important for women to understand, because I think that a lot of us, you know, it's scary to start something new. But you know, when you think about it from the point of, you know, being an experienced person in the world, it starts to feel a little less scary.
It's also exciting, right?
For sure. For sure.
And every writer in the book, you see the pivot, right? We have Natalie Wester, you know, she's an expat now. She went to start a new life in Portugal. And, you know, Marian Adams now has gotten excerpted in Katie Couric Media for her, you know, essay. And we have, you know, Skylar, who wrote about beauty, who now has, you know, she has her own blog and she helps women in midlife, you know, kind of step into her own space. And so every single essay in there shows a woman who has gone through or is going through midlife and created a new opportunity for herself. And I think that's one of the greatest things that has come out of the book, is to see the women kind of grow and move on to a new opportunity that they didn't even think they could have before.
Right. I often say to people, I never thought I'd be a divorce coach, right? But I kind of turned lemons into lemonade. My heart has led me to this work, right? You know, so I think we never know where this path is going to lead, but there is an excitement to it too. Was there anything else I forgot before we move on to our next segment, ladies? I mean, one of the things I was going to ask you actually is, like, you know, what else needs to change for us to reset these cultural norms? I mean, I think you would say, as I would, we got to keep telling these stories, right? We've got to be out there more. And we see that, you know, bubbling right now, don't you? Like, everywhere you turn, there are more midlife, like your Substack, Dina, you know, there's more podcasts, there's more articles, more books, yeah, like yours.
That's, I think, exactly, also building, like, building the community, continuing to help other women, speak other women's names in a room full of opportunities, which I just love that, you know, saying, and, you know, and telling your own story, because if we don't tell it, someone else is going to tell it for us.
Absolutely.
So that's why the storytelling part of it is so close to our heart and so important. So hopefully the community and women supporting each other will help slowly change the narrative and make change.
Yes, I think it's happening maybe quickly. Well, I'm trying to be optimistic here.
Okay. We're getting there. I'll just jump in and add, you know, because I've been working on a story actually about representation more broadly, like how Hollywood depicts us, how TV depicts us. And the Gina Davis Institute has done some really interesting studies, and we need to do better. So that, you know, I think when these stories start to be told, you know, more widely, when Hollywood depicts a woman not as a grandmother in waiting or past her prime, but a woman who's starting a business, you know, a woman who's starting to coach other women, whatever it is, you know, I think that will go a long way as well.
I definitely agree. So I want to move on to the segment we do here on Girl Wake Up called Truth or Trap. It's a common societal message women hear. I'd love to get your reaction to this. You can say whether it's truth or trap or somewhere in between. I know this one's a hot potato issue. HRT is dangerous.
Trap. I mean, it's a little bit more, you know, obviously that's a nuanced conversation, but I think that the default thinking to, oh, it's bad, is a trap, because
right. And a some lot of your writers address it.
Yeah.
I think it's really a personal choice for every woman. So I can't say whether it's truth or trap. It might be a truth for one and a trap for another. So I'm going to walk the middle of the line on that one and say that you really need to figure out if it's the right choice for you based on your body, based on your history, based on whatever, you know, whatever works for you and conversations with your doctor. And so I think that that's hard for me to answer, because I really don't have the answer. I don't know if it's a truth or a trap.
Got it. That's a good answer. So, lastly, we have a listener letter from a woman in my support group, and she says, I'm 47, exhausted, irritable, and questioning my marriage. I don't recognize myself. Is this perimenopause, or am I just unhappy? Before I pass it off to you, I have to just say, look, these are the type of women I work with as a coach, right? To determine, is this perimenopause, or is this something much deeper? But I'm sure you hear this a lot.
So is it a truth, or is it that she's perimenopausal, or is it That she is, she
just unhappy and
just unhappy.
You know, possibly wants a divorce from her marriage.
I have to think about that one. Dina, do you have that answer off the top of your head?
I don't have a top of the head, but what I would say is that's hard to know. And I think you have to do some digging to get that. It could be both of those things are true.
Right.
It could be that her marriage just sucks. And when that, you know, if that ends, maybe she finds that she's in a much better place. But, you know, look, all of these reckonings take work, right? And I think, you know, she can be on parallel tracks where she's finds somebody who's certified in menopause care, and she starts to address maybe what could be some of the physical symptoms of what's happening. And at the same time, you know, she has some difficult conversations with her spouse and with herself. And because I just think it can be such a tumultuous time for a lot of reasons. I mean, when your hormones are like insanely fluctuating from day to day, you know, that can wreak havoc on a relationship, you know, on your work, on your life. And so my feeling is it could be both of those things. Maybe it's just one of those things, but it's something that she's going to have to like sort of dive into to really explore, you know, and it's hard. It's really, that's hard stuff.
I agree. I mean, in addition to working with someone like me on that, I am so grateful for so many of the experts in this field now medically. I've worked with Dr. Isabel Bogdan, who is incredible. She has a practice here in Westport, Connecticut. You know, it's amazing what these alternative type tests and things can do and tell you about what's going on in your body, which, you know, I send so many people to her, which I think is really important. And, you know, in Katie's essay, she thought she wanted a divorce, but she really didn't, right? So she had to go down that road and have conversations with her husband and have conversations with herself, right?
Yeah. It's, you know, and that's, I was just gonna say, Katie's essay is like a perfect example of this question, right? Like Katie's husband stood in the back of the room the night we were all together at the book event, cheering her on. So thankfully she asked the questions and she figured out what was going on. And for her, the HRT was incredibly helpful to bring her back into balance and back to herself.
I've had so many women I know have said, oh my gosh, you know, it just, I felt so much better, right? Was there anything you wanted to add, Dina Alvarez?
Yeah, I mean, I think the perimenopause definitely will contribute to relationship issues because we are changing, and that's where the anger portion of it can come into play as well. And, you know, we don't recognize ourselves, right? So how do we expect our husbands to recognize us? So I definitely think that the perimenopause issue would be looked at first, and then hopefully the other part of whether or not she's truly happy in the relationship will fall into place. But I definitely would start with asking myself some perimenopausal questions and trying to get myself on track, and whether it's HRT or talking to a professional or, you know, maybe whatever can possibly help you. But I do tend to see that the perimenopause is kind of sometimes not a relationship killer, but it definitely, there's a lot of working through going through perimenopause and being in a relationship, because there's so many changes that you can't understand yourself. So how can anyone else understand?
Right. And I would recommend to our listener, read this book. This is your BFF on your bedside table, right? I know I have enjoyed reading it. I mean, everybody listening, get a copy of it from every major bookseller. You're still doing book events. Where can everybody find you, ladies?
Well, we have a website where you can find not only us, but you can learn all about the contributors to the book, too. Yes. And there's some really incredible women who contributed to this book. And many of them are serving midlife women in their own way. So definitely visit the website. You can buy the book there from a number of booksellers. And then for me, I'm on Substack. As you mentioned, Amy, it's Patina with Dina Aronson. And then my Instagram is Patina_life. And then there's a Midlife Private Parts Instagram as well. That's at Midlife Private Parts.
Yes, great.
Yeah, and the website is midlifeprivateparts.com, just to make it easy for everyone. Yeah. And I'm at A Few Good Things on Substack. And so you could find us at all those places.
Oh, wonderful. Thank you so, so much for being
Thank you,
here.
Amy.
I loved this conversation and thank you for writing this. I mean, you've helped so many of us. I'm gonna put myself in the group and I appreciate it.
Thank you
Thank
so much. And
you.
that's always so just wonderful to hear. So thank you for telling
Yeah.
us
And thank you for having us.
that. I know the listeners are gonna love this episode. Bye, ladies.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Girl Wake Up. I'm your host, Amy Polacco. If this episode woke something up in you, don't let it fade. Share it with a friend who needs to hear it, leave a review, and keep this conversation going. Remember, no one's coming to save you. So she did. Give it all.